What was Sauron's economic policy? Sure, he wanted to take over Middle-earth, but how did he manage the parts of it he already controlled? Let's take a look. Hi everyone, this is Robert. Welcome to In Deep Geek. If you like theories, background, history and lore about The Lord of the Rings, A Song of Ice and Fire and The Witcher, then this is the place for you. Welcome. Sauron's ultimate aim was obviously to take over all of Middle-earth, something he ultimately never achieved. But while he was plotting and planning to do that, he still sat at the head of an empire that covered huge expanses of South and East Middle-earth and had influence even further. People needed to be fed, towns and castles needed to be built, and goods needed to be produced or purchased. How did he manage his economy? Well, let's start with geography. Mordor, the heartland of Sauron's empire, does not come across as a particularly fertile ground for building an economic powerhouse. The three mountain ranges we can see in the famous map cut it off from the north, west, and south, making trade seem pretty difficult to start with, if that were even a thought in Sauron's mind. And the parts of Mordor we see in the story are bleak. This is what Sam saw when he looked out over it. Only a grey light came to the dreary fields of Gorgoroth. There, smokes trailed on the ground and lurked in hollows, and fumes leaked up from fissures in the earth. The whole surface of the plains of Gorgoroth was pocked with great holes, as if, while it was still a waste of soft mud, it had been smitten with a shower of bolts and huge slingstones. The largest of these holes were rimmed with ridges of broken rock, and broad fissures ran out from them in all directions. For the hungry and worn, who had far to go before life failed, it had an evil look. The plain of Gorgoroth was dim, wrapped in fume and shadow. Sam and Frodo stumbled across patches of barbed brambles, but nothing else growing. The fumes are so great that they make breathing difficult, and the clouds and general gloom make it hard to see far. There is no water, save from some cisterns left for orcs passing through. It seems like an unlikely place to serve as the centre of an empire. Unless, of course, your empire doesn't rely on hobbits and other such people seeing the sun ever. Orcs and trolls and other dark folk seem less bothered by that kind of environment. And the part of Mordor that Sam and Frodo saw is not all of Mordor, let alone all of the area controlled by Sauron. Actually, Tolkien does draw the veil back a little bit here, telling us, the reader, a little more about how a civilization could survive in such conditions. Neither Sam nor Frodo knew anything of the great slave-worked fields away south in this wide realm, beyond the fumes of the mountain by the dark, sad waters of Lake Nirnan, nor of the great roads that ran away east and south to tributary lands, from which the soldiers of the Tower brought long wagon trains of goods and booty and fresh slaves. Here in the northward regions were the mines and forges and the musterings of long-planned war. And here the Dark Power, moving its armies like pieces on the board, was gathering them together. So Sauron does have something of an economic management plan, and Tolkien tells us about it at a high level. The first takeaway from this is that not all of Mordor was like the plain of Gorgoroth that Frodo and Sam travelled through. Instead, it was split into three parts. Gorgoroth, in the northwest, was primarily there for mining, defence and administration. That's where the Dark Tower was, for example. Sauron also seems to have used the plains there for amassing his army before invasions, and obviously used the Cracks of Doom for forging magic rings. None of these purposes really needed a better climate, and the old-style orcs actively didn't want the sunshine anyway. Although we aren't given many details, it does seem that the mountains in this region also provided rich minerals for mining and raw materials for construction. But we are told that the food came from Nirn. That's the large area in the south of Mordor. Nirn was much more fertile, and made more so by the ash from the volcanoes of Mordor. There's even a large lake there, and when I say large, I mean that it's not dissimilar in size to the Shire, perhaps providing fish, although it's a seawater lake rather than a freshwater one, so its use for irrigation was limited. Nevertheless, this was how Sauron fed his forces. And before we leave Nirn, we shouldn't gloss over the fact that Sauron's workforce here was comprised of slaves. As a postscript to The Lord of the Rings, we read that Aragorn freed all those slaves and granted them the land they toiled in for themselves. We know less about the third part of Mordor, which lay in the northeast, other than the fact that it was called Lithlad, which is the Sindarin for Plain of Ashes. So perhaps it was similar to Nirn in being more fertile than Gorgoroth, but smaller and drier, so less important to the plan. So perhaps Mordor could have been self-sufficient in terms of food and minerals and the like, but it didn't have to be. And despite its high mountainous walls, Mordor forever looked outwards. Remember what Tolkien told us about those great roads that run away east and south to tributary lands, from which the soldiers of the Tower brought long wagon trains of goods and booty and fresh slaves. In other words, Mordor was serviced by a massive tributary economic hinterland to its east and south. Again, our knowledge of these peoples is limited, but it's very clear that this was not some short-term arrangement. Morgoth had corrupted many of the peoples to the east millennia earlier. Sauron was apparently happy to be worshipped as a god by some of them. And the only one of the Nazgul we actually know by name, Camul, was a great leader of the Easterlings back in the Second Age. While these lands may not have been counted as part of Mordor itself, they were in complete thrall to Sauron and provided tribute, or Sauron's forces simply took what they needed and wanted. Other nearby states seem to have had a looser arrangement. Umbar is a prime example here. Mordor's hegemony was acknowledged, tributes were paid, and the corsairs of Umbar came into the War of the Ring on Sauron's side with a clearly coordinated attack, but they seem to have retained some small degree of independence rather than complete thraldom. Even further afield, other areas also paid tribute, and not always just in money. In the History of Middle-earth, Volume 7, we read that the Orcs of Moria give Mithril in tribute to Sauron, who has long been gathering and hoarding all that he can find. It is not known why, not for beauty, but for some secret purpose in the making of weapons of war. As an aside, you have to wonder what Sauron was hoarding all that Mithril for. I gave my own answer in another video. Nevertheless, the point here is twofold. First, we have confirmation that some peoples and nations beyond the south and east paid tribute to Sauron, and second, that Sauron was sitting on a mound of financial reserves. Remember that Gandalf pithily observed that Bilbo's Mithril mail armour was probably worth more than the whole Shire. Sauron had a lot more than that, a lot more. It seems that the idea of paying tribute to Sauron was well known in Middle-earth, as a first step to coming under his control completely. Gimli quizzed Éomer about whether Rohan was doing just that. "Then you do not pay tribute to Sauron?" said Gimli. "We do not, and we never have," said Éomer with a flash of his eyes, "though it comes to my ears that that lie has been told. Some years ago, the Lord of the Blackland wished to purchase horses of us at a great price, but we refused him, for he puts beasts to evil use. Then he sent plundering orcs, and they carry off what they can, choosing always the black horses. Few of these are now left. For that reason, our feud with the orcs is bitter." This is interesting, because it suggests that Sauron was willing to set up trade relations with some realms, particularly if they had goods that he did not have and could not produce himself. Black horses from Rohan, for example. That said, we shouldn't take this as anything approaching a commitment to free trade or a mutually beneficial movement of goods and services. If Sauron didn't get what he wanted, he just took it. Which brings us back to the conquering thing. We often think of Sauron as being all about the conquering, and he did do a fair bit of that, it has to be said, but his default mode of foreign policy was often a lot more subtle and underhanded. The long con he was trying to do with the Rings of Power was about gaining control without invasion. He brought down Numenor without ever invading it, and even when at his lowest power, recuperating as the necromancer in Dol Guldur, he slowly gained control of most of Mirkwood without a major war. Above all, he was patient, and a patient megalomaniac autocrat still needs a system to keep his empire ticking over and growing through those many centuries when he wasn't at war. Clearly Sauron's big advantage here, as with the elves we looked at in a previous Economics of Middle-earth video, is that he is immortal, and his chief lieutenants are also immortal. The Nazgul weren't just battle commanders, they were left in charge of the management of important places like Minas Morgul and Dol Guldur. They could establish consistent economic policies over centuries without worrying about short-term problems or issues. For example, Sauron ordered the construction of Barad-dûr, the tallest and most indomitable tower in all Middle-earth, and was happy to wait 600 years for it to be completed, an unimaginable time frame for normal mortals. And Sauron's other advantage, though we might not think of it as such, is his disregard for the well-being of those under his rule. I dread to think how many orcs and other lackeys died in building Barad-dûr. He was obviously ruthless, which eventually led to his downfall, but in the short term, it meant that he could take and demand whatever he needed, knowing that there would be another generation of cowed humans or orcs ready for him any year now. So let's bring all of this together. What was Sauron's economic policy? Basically, he ruled over a command economy based on slave labour and a large area of tributary economic hinterlands. This was all rounded off with an aggressive, expansionist foreign policy that often led to new territories coming under the influence of the thrall of Mordor. Mordor itself, with its mineral-rich north and fertile south, provided a strong economic base, with any additional needs seen to by forced imports from vassal states, territorial incursions, and invasions where necessary. Wherever possible, though, economic and military rivals were dealt with by stealth rather than direct force. And above all, this was about control. The system was autocratic to the extreme. The Eye of Sauron atop the Black Tower saw and commanded everything, ultimately to his own downfall. If you'd like to see more Lord of the Rings videos like this, there's a link to my playlist on the left of your screen now. Or to support this channel, thank you. There's a link to my Patreon page on the right of your screen. Thanks for watching. That's all for this time. I'll see you again soon.